Hello and welcome to the Centre for Cities podcast. The Centre for Cities is the first port of call for independent research and policy analysis focusing on UK city economies. For more information on this series or our broader research and events programme, please visit www.centreforcities.org.
Welcome to the Centre for Cities podcast. My name is Andrew Carter and today we're going to be talking about the political party manifestos and the degree to which cities have featured in each of them. And some of the implications from that. I'm joined by my colleagues Ben Harrison, Simon Jeffrey and Louise McGough. So turning to you first, Louise, just give us a sense as to where cities were and how they featured in the Liberal Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, the Lib Dem manifesto is quite policy heavy, so there's a lot of detail in many areas. I suppose the key policy for cities is that they commit to build on the city deals and growth deals that we've seen in the past government. They also talk about a system of devolution on demand, but it doesn't really specify whether this is for cities in particular or all areas across the country. On housing, the Lib Dems talk specifically about cities and areas that need housing the most, and that this is where we should focus on. So there's a focus there on, for example, Oxford, Luton. And elsewhere, I mean, there are issues that are important for cities. On productivity and skills, the Lib Dems would focus on R&D and STEM subjects. On transport, they would give places more powers over local buses and transport funding, for example.
OK, so we'll come back to some of those issues in a bit more detail in a moment. Simon, give us a sense as to how the Conservatives talked about cities in their manifesto.
Well, it starts off strong. I mean, they've got obviously a record which they're looking to follow through in the next parliament. There's the legislating on the Manchester devolution deal, and it talks about actually rolling that out a bit further. You know, more big cities with directly elected mayors being the key thing, getting more powers. But really from then on, you know, it becomes very general and national in terms of policy areas. And, you know, when it talks about devolution, it talks about the home nations. But it's probably the other area where it really talks about cities is transport. So £13 billion transport infrastructure spending to link up the north and try and boost those economies. But then elsewhere, it is very much about national figures on housing. So 200,000 new starter homes, extending right to buy. But it doesn't really get into cities on that, you know, an extra 3 million apprenticeship places.
Okay, so Ben, just give us where we are with the Labour manifesto and where cities were in that.
Well, I think in some respects the Labour manifesto covers similar ground to the other two major party manifestos in that there is this desire to continue and build upon the city deal process that we've seen through the previous government. But where I think it differs most markedly with, say, the Conservative manifesto is, you know, there is a real desire here to see that approach applied universally, and they're explicit about that. So that is most evident in their £30 billion local growth fund proposal, which they would seek to roll out across the country to cities and county regions, critically. So the idea that actually everywhere would be able to bid into this pot of money to access additional funds to boost growth, to do things locally. So that's really an extension of the kind of process we've seen through this parliament, but with some more money attached to it. And I think there's a real question there about, you know, does that equal really more devolution of power or not? And I think that's a real question which perhaps we'll get into in a bit more detail. I think more broadly than that, you know, there are some encouraging signs within the manifesto on housing, for example. You know, they are explicit about the need to improve and increase the supply of new housing. They'd like to be delivering 200,000 new units by 2020. Much less detail in there about how you would actually go about doing some of that. A big focus on apprenticeships and getting more attention on the need to skill up young people and make sure that the skills of young people match the demand within the private sector. And on transport, a desire to push power down to places to be able to take more control over things like buses and train services, particularly when we're thinking about the big city regions.
Okay, thanks for that. Let's now have a think about, given where we were in 2014 and early 2015, where we had all three leaders making statements, big statements and speeches on cities. We had the Chancellor announcing Northern Powerhouse and then renouncing Northern Powerhouse, the DPM talking about Northern Futures. Are we a little bit disappointed? Should we be a little bit disappointed with the depth of involvement or depth of issues around cities that we see in the manifestos? Ben?
I don't think we should be necessarily. I think, I mean, you're absolutely right that 2014 there was a real sense of a race to the top between the parties. I think it's telling that all three of the major parties have, in some shape or form, addressed this idea of pushing power down out of the centre to regions, cities, localities across the country. And I think, you know, that does mark real progress, even though, you know, one might quibble over the extent to which, you know, these plans are ambitious enough. I don't think, you know, we should forget that actually, you know, this is one of the most centralised countries in the Western world. We've been banging this drum for more powers to for places to shape policy to their needs for a long time. And actually, I think this does mark a bit of a watershed that all three parties are looking to address it. Does that mean that we've got exactly what we wanted to see in each of the party manifestos? No, it doesn't. And I think, you know, the battle will continue into the next parliament to make sure that, A, some of these commitments are delivered. So as Simon said about the Greater Manchester deal, you know, the Conservatives have pledged to see that through. Well, we need to make sure that, you know, whether it's Conservative-led government or not, we see that actually take place. And then we need to make sure that pressure is being applied both nationally and locally to see more progress for other places as well.
Should we have expected more in the Liberal Democrat manifesto, Louise?
I don't think it's surprising that cities in particular don't feature as a kind of angle in the Lib Dem manifesto. I mean, we know that kind of traditional agenda is on localism more broadly. And I'd actually say for the Lib Dem manifesto, there's quite an ambitious proposal here to think about fiscal devolution and local government finance in a more wholesale way should they be form part of the next government. And it kind of falls under the radar a little bit, but it's, you know, the idea is to look more closely at the kind of SIPFA Independent Finance Commission paper and think really carefully about what powers, tools, incentives and fiscal freedoms local areas have. So it's not a specific policy for cities, but it is something that's very important for cities and that we'd like to see going forward. So that's kind of quite encouraging, really, on that manifesto.
I suppose it's in part related to a question about, you know, for each of the mainstream political parties, the importance of cities and the urban as places where they either have seats or they're looking to gain seats. So, Simon, from that perspective, where are the Conservatives? How important are cities and the urban in a political sense to the Conservatives?
Oh, they're vital. I mean, they've been unable to win a parliamentary majority since 1992. I mean, 2010 was a great opportunity for them, and they still fell short against a pretty weak Labour government by that point. And I think George Osborne, who's, you know, widely regarded as having sort of one of the most political minds in the Conservative Party and probably British politics overall, has taken the action on Manchester not just as a route to greater economic prosperity for the area, but also as a route back into the seats where the Conservatives were, or, you know, have been almost wiped out and are being hobbled against any kind of majority at Westminster by their, you know, lack of presence. And that's across the north, which, funnily enough, is the home of the Northern powerhouse, and where he's been spending a lot of his time, and, you know, hoping, I imagine, once the directly elected mayor is in position, to maybe one day, not too far in the future, have a Boris Johnson of the North, or at the very least have 5 or 10 more MPs in the Northwest.
And I mean, that's somewhat ironically, Ben. I mean, you know, Labour, obviously their heartland are the urban areas, both at the local level, at the national level. And yet, consistently for the last 18 months, 2 years, they've been behind the curve, certainly behind the Conservatives in the thinking around the Northern powerhouse and, you know, pushing the devolution agenda. Why is that?
I think there's probably two main reasons for that. I think the first is there is a tension within Labour thinking on some of this between, you know, seeking to maximise productivity in the economy and actually, you know, support areas with the capacity to grow, as well as thinking about redistribution, universalism, you know, being very reluctant to engage in policy agendas or areas where they would be seen to be advocating different outcomes for different parts of the country. Mm. Devolution in that sense within England is inherently tricky for them in that regard, because, you know, within the idea of pushing power out and advocating different solutions for different places, you know, that just provides them with a real challenge to think, well, if doing so would allow some places to accelerate further than other parts of the country, you know, what impact does that have on our ability to redistribute from those that are doing well to those that are doing less well? Yeah. That's a tension within the party. I also think there's a second element to it, which is, you know, it's telling in the Labour Party manifesto, the commentary around cities and county regions comes within, you know, an area about devolving power to people. It's not within the economy section. So actually, I think there is still within the Labour Party not enough of a recognition that actually, if we want to boost growth in the years ahead, cities, explicitly cities, are where we need to focus our attention, and we need to get more from our cities so that they're fulfilling their potential across the country.
And that's similar in the Liberal Democrat manifesto, isn't it, Louise, in a sense of not really an appreciation that if you want national success, if you want more people to be have their living standards increase, if you want more housing to be built, if you want better and more jobs, then you should be thinking much more about how cities can help you achieve those objectives.
Yeah, I definitely agree that you know, the focus is not on cities. I'm not sure whether this is a kind of intentional play in this particular manifesto as a kind of open invitation to form a coalition with whichever party ends up being a majority or minority leading the government, and whether this is a kind of intentional kind of open invitation there, or whether it you know, it's the kind of morals of the party itself. But you know, on housing, the Lib Dems are actually the only party who mentioned specific cities and the specific need to think about where homes are needed most, and I think that angle on kind of demand is really, really important, something the other parties don't talk about. There's a lot of focus on kind of R&D and STEM subjects and research, which, although it doesn't say cities, is vitally important to cities in particular. So the Lib Dems do think about productivity, housing, transport, in a way that is very important for urban areas as well.
Okay, that's a good prompt. Let's get into a little bit of detail on some of those particular policy areas. So you talked a little bit about the Liberal Democrats specifying some places for taking more housing or build more housing. What else have they got to say on housing? Then we can hear what Labour and the Conservatives have got to say as well.
So the Lib Dems would want to build 300,000 homes. That's the kind of number that they've chosen to a certain degree, in 10 garden cities specifically. So again, that's carrying on with the kind of garden city approach that we've seen in the past government, and they would build 10 across the country, specifically in the southeast. So there's that kind of demand again. You know, the Lib Dem manifesto is incredibly policy heavy. There's long lists of housing, and you know, as we've said elsewhere, this really reflects a year in which housing has come to the fore in the election campaign. On Greenbelt, which I think is a particularly interesting area for us to look at, the manifesto is effectively silent. The focus is definitely to build on brownfield and town centre areas. Greenbelt just kind of gets left there, and with no specific mention whether or not that's a kind of no-go area.
Okay. So on Conservatives, mainly talking about home ownership and the demand side of the housing issue. Simon,
yeah,
is that right?
They come out and call themselves the party of homeowners or home ownership, one or the other. And
as they've always called themselves for a number
of
years.
I mean, there's sort of home owning democracy, property owning democracy of Margaret Thatcher, and you know, there was a bit of a tribute act in the, you know, social housing right to buy proposal which they put out there, which you know will, you know, probably not do anything greatly to increase the stock of housing if the sort of ratio of replacement that took place with council housing is anything to go by. I mean, they are also trying to be quite aspirational and get more people owning homes, but not really, you know, increasing the supply. So, you know, building 200,000 starter homes, subsidising, you know, help to buy ICEs so that, you know, if you put 12,000 in, you get 15,000, you can you know, put money towards a deposit. And you know, all these things are going to increase demand, really, for, well, at least put the, you know, price up that people can pay. You know, things like inheritance tax thresholds going up is probably going to have an impact on sort of value of property in cities. But it's not really a great story to be told on house building, apart from in Ebbsfleet and Bicester,
right,
where they say it's only where community demand will they build stuff. And they say, you know, we want 90% of Greenbelt to have planning permission and, you know, plans to build on by 2020. Mm-hmm. But they also have plans for pocket parks in all cities so that, you know, there's little bits of green everywhere. So they call about a right to build for places. So, so councils have to offer that. But it's probably quite clear that that's not going to extend to the Greenbelt, which is enshrined again and actually talks about rolling back some of the backsliding that Labour allowed under its 13 years of councils, you know, eating into the Green Belt as they see it.
Yeah, OK. And Labour, they seem to have had two bites at the housing policy issue. Stuff that was in the manifesto on different things, and then a couple of days ago on rent controls or some form of rent control and some removal of stamp duty levies for first-time or buyers. So where are we on the housing agenda in for the Labour Party?
That's right. We now have a sixth campaign pledge for Labour, which has been added to the pledge card late in the day on housing. You're absolutely right, both in terms of supporting first-time buyers and on trying to at least introduce an element of control to the rental markets. And that really is, I think, a response to some of the things you've just heard from Simon there on the Conservative plans on supporting people into home ownership. I mean, Ed Miliband explicitly said as he announced those measures, Labour is now the party of home ownership. So it's a direct land grab for that kind of territory. And I think it's very interesting from that. I mean, you know, the parties are really very much at pains to prove that those kind of interventions are fully costed, fully planned for, that you know, they've got really crystal clear plans on that kind of side of things. Labour, just as with the other two you know, main parties, also boasting, you know, we're going to deliver 200,000 homes a year by 2020 or whatever the other party's numbers are. Much less detail on that. You know, they're not telling us where, who's going to pay for them, whether that's going to be on the back of government borrowing, how they're going to work with local areas to deliver them in the places that they're most needed. And I think that's partly to do with the politics of the situation. I think, you know, they clearly perceive that actually there's more votes in talking about access to the housing stock that exists at the moment, as opposed to getting into those issues of, well, if we are going to build all of these houses, does that mean concreting over the Green Belt? Similar to the Liberal Democrats, they're silent on that issue. And I think actually a good deal of this comes down to the kinds of signals that the parties are sending out. The Conservatives explicit, we won't be building on the Green Belt. In fact, we'll even introduce a Blue Belt for coastal areas, marine areas, whereas Labour and the Lib Dems seemingly at least could potentially be more open to, if not, you know, wholesale reviews of the Green Belt, at least accepting that if we're going to deliver the numbers they're pledging, something will have to change.
Okay, let's just turn very briefly to look at jobs and skills. All of them, I think, mentioned in majoring on apprenticeships, I think, so get some sense of how they compare and contrast on that. And then we'll turn a little bit to transport and then pick up some issues around tax. So Liberal Democrats on job skills and apprenticeships. Any highlights from that, Louise?
Yeah, as you mentioned, I mean, apprenticeships are the kind of the focus here, again, as part of a very, very long list of policies. But, you know, the aim is to deliver 200,000 grants to employers to take on apprentices, double the number of businesses who hire them. So, again, a lot around here around the supply of apprenticeships. Not so much on the quality or the type, which is obviously very important. Interestingly, the Lib Dems would protect funding from education from nursery to age 19, which is a kind of something quite interesting, and there's not much detail on that as well. As I mentioned earlier, focus on STEM subjects, more money for R&D, a bit on kind of industrial strategy and thinking about skills in the kind of green sector and funding certain areas in particular.
But all of those are at the national level rather than thinking about whether and how they play out at the place level, local level. Okay.
Absolutely.
Simon, jobs, apprenticeships, skills, what have the Conservatives got to say on that?
Well, they are, like all the parties, proposing millions more apprenticeships. I think they say 3 million. But they do actually talk about the quality of it, and that is increasing. They want degree apprenticeships, more of those. And, you know, they are still not quite talking about it on a, you know, a spatial level. It's a national policy. They are saying that there should be a university technical college within reach of every city. And they, one thing they do talk about, you know, in terms of regional policy, is try and get clusters outside of the southeast, which is obviously, you know, home to quite a number of high values or high exporting, high knowledge clusters. But they are also talking about, well, immigration hits on skills in one way, where they say because of the cap that they're going to put on skilled immigration, about 20,000 a year from outside the EU, they're going to say, what would the skills shortage list for, you know, for jobs? Any companies that keep going back to that list for, you know, to try and get someone actually they're going to have to start providing long-term plans for how they're going to train British workers.
Any differences or lots of similarities from the from Labour, Ben?
Broadly, lots of similarities. You know, apprenticeship's a key theme in amongst their plans on jobs and skills. I think what's quite interesting is, in a sense, a lot of this has a ring of Gordon Brown about it, the way Labour express some of their commitments on this. So there's a guarantee of an apprenticeship for every school leaver with the correct grades. So
is that trying to bring back in the jobs guarantee fund? That
yes. So, I mean, there is, there's actually explicitly a compulsory jobs guarantee as well to give a paid start a job for young people unemployed for over a year. We've seen that before under the last Labour government as well. But alongside that, there's also, I guess, a couple of other interesting things around a new technical baccalaureate for 16 to 18 year olds, trying to, you know, a determination to expand the availability of technical degrees within the university system. And there's also talk of commissioning a replacement for the work programme at a local level, but there's not a huge amount of detail as to what that would actually look like.
Okay. Transport. Do we see any how they're using transport to improve connectivity between urban areas, within urban areas? What have they got to say on that? Simon, anything from the Conservatives?
Well, they are. They commit themselves in London to Crossrail 2. Obviously, there's the Northern Powerhouse, which is going to rely on High Speed 3. They are talking about supporting their proposals for transport for the North, I think it is. So, actually, transport's probably the big area of local policy in the Conservative manifesto.
And much of this was set out, and has been set out at various intervals by the Chancellor through Northern Powerhouse, and I think the manifesto gives us a sense as to that they continue to do that. Louise, transport, Liberal Democrats?
Yeah, there's quite a lot in there, actually. I mean, the Lib Dems would proceed with HS2. There's no mention of HS3, which some of the other parties do talk about, but they pledge to kind of connect Oxford and Cambridge specifically, so looking at East-West rail. They think about HS2 as kind of first step to high-speed rail to Scotland, so that's kind of specific area. Committing to deliver the Transport for the North plan, which we've already seen set out. And on some of the more kind of detailed stuff, looking at kind of 10-year capital investment plans on the kind of policy changes that we might see, thinking about more powers over regulation and policy design for local places around buses and transport. Again, it's not specific whether that's cities or what geography that would be, where that's city regions, but kind of this is where the manifesto really kind of sits between the other two, in a sense, on thinking about how transport might change. Obviously, specifically opposing airport expansion in Heathrow, Stansted, Gatwick and anywhere in the southeast, which we kind of expect.
Do they propose expansion of any other airport outside of the southeast?
No.
They don't. Okay. Ben, Labour and transport. What have you got to say?
I mean, I think over and above what I mentioned earlier about trying to push control over buses and rail down to a city region level, I think the most significant thing is probably their commitment to a National Infrastructure Commission, which has obviously been long trailed in things like the Armour Review and things like that on infrastructure investment. You know, a cynic might say, well, you know, you're trying to depoliticise what are quite difficult decisions sometimes. But I think, you know, probably what this is most aimed at is trying to provide a degree of stability and a sense of the long term for Britain's economy, and trying to build in some certainty to, you know, which stretches beyond individual governments about the kinds of infrastructure priorities we need to see funding for. That will have a big play for cities. And actually, I think it'll be interesting to see how the local and the national interact on that. And I think also interestingly that, you know, they're saying they're going to support the construction of High Speed 2, providing they can keep the costs down. And that to me feels like they're giving themselves a little bit of wiggle room to at least amend the specifics on High Speed 2, if not backtrack from the scheme in its entirety.
Okay, let's just turn to funding and finance, notwithstanding the fact that all of them remain obsessed with deficit reduction and getting the economy into surplus, or at least into balance. Putting that aside for the moment, have any of the manifestos got anything to say around the degree to which cities or localities will have greater freedoms and flexibilities to retain taxes and revenues that are generated in their place, and indeed ultimately to vary them either through council tax or through business rates or something else? Labour. Where are they on that?
Yeah, so very limited is the answer in that regard, I think it's fair to say. So similar to the other parties in that where they are willing to make movement is around business rates in particular. So they're explicit that city and county regions will be able to retain 100% of additional business rates generated.
But it is only the additional growth element, not the actual overall business rates take those areas.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
And actually, on the rest of the idea of fiscal devolution, there's not really a lot in the manifesto. And no. I think, you know, what that implies to me is that when we're thinking about, you know, the local growth fund and those kind of issues, that will be the primary means through which they'll do devolution in that sense, rather than thinking about particular pots of tax or you know other kinds of retention locally.
So it's still a case, I think, in that instance, maybe on the others, where money spent or investment made in cities comes from a special fund.
Yes.
Whether it's a local growth fund or whatever else it is called, rather than part of the mainstream.
What I think does separate Labour from the other parties, and the IFS have been pretty clear about this as well, is that at a national level, at least, they've given themselves more headroom to borrow to invest in things that could boost economic growth.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, through the course of the Parliament, you would expect that to have an impact within urban areas where some of those investments are likely to be located.
Yeah, OK. Liberal Democrats, anything to say on funding and financing flexibilities?
I mean, yeah, as I mentioned earlier, there's a kind of big, broad statement about reviewing the state of local government finance, mm-hmm. but no specifics on exactly what that would be. So you're kind of referred back to the CIPFA Commission. So it's both encouraging and also leaves the door open for lots of things not to happen if it goes that way. On business rates specifically, it's a kind of commitment to review the system, and they pledge no increases in the headline rates of kind of income tax, national insurance, VAT, which is something that we've heard in the media from other parties today as well. Interestingly, the Green Party manifesto is the most ambitious on the topic of fiscal devolution, giving local authorities, you know, rate setting and retention powers on income tax, freedom to change the rate of council tax and business rates. So if any party stands out, it's the Green Party on fiscal devolution.
Conservatives, where are they on fiscal flexibility at the local level?
Well, I think they're on the same page as the Lib Dems. I mean, they're promising a review on business rates. I mean, quite a prominent part of their manifesto is their, you know, quite a proud claim that they've made council tax fall by 11% in real terms over the course of the Parliament, which obviously is in great part down to the 2% limit before you need a referendum for local places to raise council tax above that. And they are also talking about returning a bit more money from sort of land sales and local government sell-offs back to councils to try and support them for development in those areas.
So we'll turn in a second to think about what the nature of a coalition would be based on the degree to which they have similarities or differences on the city's agenda. But before we do that, let's just pick up the last big issue, which is overwhelmingly an urban issue. We know 80% of those that come to the country live in our urban areas. Immigration. Where are we in relation to immigration and cities and growth across the manifestos? Let's start with the Conservatives.
Well, they still want to, well, I think it's an ambition now, cap immigration in the tens of thousands, even though it's sort of risen to nearly 300,000, I think. But yeah, if they do manage to do that, that will have a massive impact on cities. They also talk about limiting immigration from the EU by trying to, you know, dampen down some of those pull factors. So you'll be unable to claim any sort of job seekers allowance, and you'll be kicked out after 6 months if you haven't got a job. Mm-hmm. But then in terms of universal services, you need to be putting in for 4 years now before you can, well, that's their ambition, before you can start taking out. And you do think about the impact that could have in our cities with people needing care. And then there's also the limits on benefits, which they're going to, I think, cut down from 26 to 23,000 for households, which is obviously going to be felt most acutely in high cost living areas. So, I mean, the things that you've already seen with Newham, getting people to move out to Stoke or Birmingham, mm-hmm. I mean, with it, with the squeeze even further on the amount that councils can pay, mm-hmm. and the cost of what they do have to pay for going up even more.
Okay.
I think you're going to see more of that.
Yeah, so similar elements in from the Labour Party, I think, now increasingly. Ben, have they got anything to say around the sort of high-skilled end of the immigration debate and discussion?
So all of Labour's arguments, or most of the arguments that they make in public, you know, touch upon that issue, that actually high-skilled immigration is important for the UK economy, and they wouldn't seek to shut that off. And I think Ed Miliband made a speech just a few days ago ruling out a cap of any kind on migration, saying that A, it's not workable, and B, it's actually not good for the economy. Interestingly, the IOD, who don't often come out and praise Ed Miliband, endorse that as a policy position. Mm. I think that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, Labour echo a lot of what the Conservatives have planned in principle, if not in detail. So we've got a 2-year benefit ban for EU migrants. They are going to seek to tackle the undercutting of the UK minimum wage by firms. Obviously, that's already illegal, but they're you know, Ed Miliband pledging to do more to kind of crack down on that. So trying to tackle this idea that somehow immigrants are driving down wages within parts of the economy. But I think that's it, really. The extent to which Labour is talking about this on either a skills basis or on an exploitation basis, it's people focused rather than place.
Okay. Liberal Democrats.
I mean, this is definitely where the Liberal Democrat manifesto's language is markedly different from the other two. It's very positive about immigration in a way. You know, no limits on accessing benefits from a time point of view for EU or any other migrants. Actually reinstating post-study work visas for STEM graduates in particular. Continuing to allow high-skill immigration. So the language is very much positive around encouraging immigration. There is a focus on high skill there. But, you know, definitely very, very different to the other two manifestos. And this is exactly the type of immigration that we need in our cities to continue to drive growth and productivity.
OK, great. So let's conclude by thinking about, given the manifestos, if each of the parties were the significant player in the next government, what we might expect, what the sort of city's flavour would be around their programme of government. So let's start with the Conservatives first, Simon. If they are either the majority party or the significant partner in a coalition or indeed running a minority government, what's our sense as to the city's agenda and where it'll be in the overall scheme of their programme of government?
I think it will be business as usual in terms of continuing what they've done with Manchester, continuing with the city deals and growth deals, which deliver sort of different levels of powers and funding to different places according to what they can offer and, you know, what they think their local partners can do. And in terms of a coalition, I think Conservatives have probably only got a choice of Lib Dems. I mean, obviously SNP have ruled themselves out. You're not going to have a grand coalition with Labour. So any minority or coalition involving Conservatives would see us within another 5 years along broadly the same lines.
Steady as we go, more of the same. Okay, let's do Liberal Democrats. Let's imagine that they are a significant player, either in their own right or as part of a coalition. What would their contribution be to the city's agenda in government?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point because on cities specifically, they don't seem to come out very strongly either way between kind of rural and urban areas. But actually on the policies that you see them zero in on, they're very, very important for growth and productivity across the country and for cities as well. So although they're national policies, when we're thinking about kind of, you know, investment in R&D, more powers over transport, thinking about fiscal devolution, the local government finance system, and is it fit for purpose, where we actually build housing as a nation, and that's got to be in areas of demand. Those policies might actually end up helping cities very much, even though they're not the kind of specific areas. So there's a commitment to city deals and growth deals, but you don't quite feel that's the heart's really in it. But on a lot of the actual policies, the detail is very much what we'd like to see to support urban areas.
Very good point. Very good point. A Labour-led government in some shape or form, where would the city's agenda be, Ben?
I think there's reasons to be optimistic about that scenario, and there's reasons to be a little bit concerned. I think, you know, clearly Labour is committed to boosting the amount of money that's included in any deals-based programme across the country. I would fully expect, under either a minority or a majority scenario, for them to prioritise that in the first 18 months worth of government. It may take, you know, they want to realign some of the geographies associated with that, get LEPs to align with city regions. That could take some time, but certainly by mid-2016 you would expect to see something happening, you know, in the allocation of funding to urban areas and other parts of the country. But I think there is a broad concern that in seeking to implement a policy which essentially applies everywhere, we'll see a real dilution of what could be achieved in those deals. It's just simply difficult to do that many deals at the same time. We saw that with the second round of city deals and the growth deals in the current go that the government just gone. And so, you know, there's a concern about that, I think. And I think the other reflection I would have is if we're going to see a Labour administration with some kind of involvement from the SNP or some kind of tacit support from the SNP, then this agenda will become more important for Labour, because they will need to have an answer to the English question. Voters, newspapers, commentators will be concerned that somehow the government will be pulled onto the SNP's agenda. Labour will need to demonstrate that they're not. They won't go with a conservative approach of English votes for English laws, because politically that makes no sense for them, given their support across England. Much more likely is they'll double down on the cities and county regions devolution agenda. Whether that will mean just more rhetoric as opposed to more action, I think remains to be seen, but it'll certainly have an impact on how they promote that agenda and how they go forward with it.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks to Louise, to Simon and to Ben. I hope you've enjoyed the Centre for Cities podcast. You can get much more information and more detailed briefings on the election and what it means and the implications for the next government at our website, www.centreforcities.org. Thanks for listening.